President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 15th on the West Coast, now February the 16th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. And we would also like to welcome those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network. Well, I'm going to start off tonight's show with a tribute to someone who was a part of my life, part of this show for a while, and certainly someone who stood behind the presidential candidacy of Congressman Ron Paul. Who am I talking about? Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson founded a company called Eagle Marketing, operating out of Tennessee, actually the Eagle Marketing Group, to be more specific. And he was the founder of a website called RonPaulFlags.com. If you've seen any of the hundreds of different Ron Paul flags seen around the country, really around the world and on the internet for sure, at many of the political rallies, speeches, and get-togethers. This was the man behind the invention of the Ron Paul flag. Chris said that he could feel the Lord tugging at his heartstrings, pushing him to start this as a business. He's an entrepreneurial spirit, and he made it a point to sort of address his emotions, and he put it aside, and then again he felt like this was something he had to do. Well, and he became rather well known for having done that, and I did feature the Ron Paul flags on my website, directlightproductions.com, up until a couple of months before the election. Anyway, this evening I got the sad news that Chris Johnson had passed away earlier this afternoon, leaving a wife, Becky, and two sons, Luke and Levi. And if you have either done business with Chris Johnson or owned a Ron Paul flag during the 2008 election, or just remember him. He was a guest on this show, and if you want to bring some peace and solace to his family, then I ask you to please pray for Becky, Luke, and Levi Johnson. And I had a song that I've been thinking about playing over the past 2 weeks, and something kept pulling me back, saying, no, don't play it yet tonight. Tonight's not the night you're going to play this. And I had no idea. So it happens about 2 days ago, I was thinking of Chris. It's just a random thought, wondering how he was doing. And then I learned this evening that he was talking about me the night before. How strange these things happen, how spirit gives us signs and tells us. But I'm going to play a song which happens to be performed by a group that is known from their stint in Tennessee and their musical career. It's a very successful musical career. This is the Oak Ridge Boys, and this is dedicated to my friend, our friend, certainly Ron Paul's friend, Chris Johnson, the American Dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, they moved away from the farms they did not own to live happily ever after on a GI loan. The future was looking bright back in 52. Neath the shadow of atomic bombs and the baby boom. You could take a walk downtown without being afraid. And hey, who's the better center fielder, Mantle or Mays? There was chicken in every pot, even when times were lean. We thought everybody had a shot at the American dream. Every mother was supposed to look like Donna Reed. Father knew what was best for you and me. Our lives were etched on 8 millimeter frames as we grew up in houses that all looked the same. There was trouble on the other side of town. It was a time when people began to stand their ground. Arm in arm they stood as they cried, "Let freedom ring." Everybody wanted to share the American dream. Dream on, children, dream on. Don't let anybody tell you the dream is gone. As long as there's a God above, keep on praying we never wake up. Keep on dreaming the American dream. Medals on the wall I got back in 69, and the quarter acre piece of heaven I call mine. As I turn off the cable and put my babies to bed, I kiss them goodnight and whisper under my breath, "Dream on, children, dream on. Don't let anybody tell you the dream is gone. As long as there's a God above, keep on praying we never wake up. Keep on dreaming the American dream. We'll keep on dreaming the American dream."
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. That was the Oak Ridge Boys singing The American Dream, and I just dedicated that to good friend Mr. Chris Johnson. If you would please again pray for his wife Becky and their two sons Luke and Levi. I want to read a couple of things off of ronpaulflags.com. As I mentioned, Chris was a very devoted Christian man, and he put a few quotes there, which are kind of interesting. One of the quotes is his. His first quote, "When people are in the midst of battles or a great battle, these are the times when your gift manifests. Know who you are and manifest your passion that I've given you, saith the Lord. Big government creates dependency. Small government creates independence, free enterprise, especially for small businesses and a thriving economy." Chris Johnson, founder of RonPaulFlags.com. Another quote, "Truth will ultimately prevail where there is pains to bring it to light. Government is not a reason. It is not eloquent. It is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Liberty, when it begins to take root, is a plant of rapid growth. Associate with men of good quality if you esteem your own reputation, for it is better to be alone than in bad company. Be courteous to all, but intimate with few, and let those few be well tried before you give them your confidence. The Constitution is the guide which I never will abandon." Those are quotes from George Washington. And this was on Chris's website, still is there. Well, moving along, we have two guests tonight. And one hosts a website, educate-yourself.org, and is himself an accomplished journalist, a frequent guest on Evident Footprints, and some other radio shows as well. And he actually posts the essays that guest number two writes. And we have back with us again tonight my good friends Ken Adachi and Z.S. Livingstone. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Don.
Welcome, Don.
Well, I don't know if either of you guys knew Chris Johnson or heard of him. Certainly, you must have seen the Ron Paul flags that were everywhere.
Yes, I remember seeing the flags. No, I didn't know the fellow until you briefly told me about him and what had happened. But yeah, I do remember seeing the flags. So I had no idea that was a single individual who was behind those, producing them.
Well, it wasn't a single individual. He claims that God was helping him do it.
Yes,
I have every reason to accept that as the truth.
Right.
I personally did not see the Ron Paul flags up here in Canada, but we saw lots of Ron Paul bumper stickers coming up from vehicles in Washington State and Idaho and Montana. So knew about Ron Paul, read it on the back of vehicles.
Well, there's word that Ron Paul may be running again in 2012. We'll see. But I'm sure we haven't seen the end of the Ron Paul flags. That's a given.
Yeah.
So, well, gentlemen, the last time we were on the show, we talked about a lot of things. And I know that you were both hoping to discuss some of ZS's work in regard to Haiti and some other issues that he's been discerning going on around the planet. And either one is free to comment in that regard.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to mention just a couple things. I'd like to give the bulk of this tonight's time to ZS because he has quite a number of interesting things that he'd like to expand on, and he needs sufficient time to explore those avenues. So I'm just going to talk very briefly. Since this announcement of this fellow that you talked about at the beginning of the show, I'll just mention a few things about the nature of life, and that sometimes we have somebody who we know well, and he passes on sooner than we expect, and it's always a shock. And younger people particularly tend to get shooken up when somebody they knew close unexpectedly dies. And it's a normal part of life to experience these things, but it's very useful to know that what we call everyday reality in life is really a sort of well, some people refer to it as an illusion, and some other groups, like if you remember, Aboriginal people, when they would talk about their tribal notions about the life and death, frequently speak about life, everyday life, as being what they call dream time. And it's based on a profound truth, is that what we experience as what we call everyday life is in fact more of a reflection of a greater reality rather than being the be-all and end-all, quote, reality, because we are all immortal beings having an experience together. And we're having that experience in this form of working through a body and having kind of the sort of conflicts that we encounter during physical life here on Earth. But we nevertheless are a greater reality of this spirit. And that once we leave the physical body, we enter back into this larger spirit reality, which is really much closer to the real deal than what we're experiencing here. Now, this is earthly life. Physical life is a lot of fun. It's exciting. It's adventurous. It's pleasurable. It's enjoyable in many ways. And we all, get used to this. And if we don't know, or we're not aware of the greater reality beyond this, then we tend to want to cling to this as being the only thing that's, quote, of importance in value. But we should know that what we're experiencing here is really a reflection of what's going on in our minds and hearts. Very often I mention on my website that we create reality with our thoughts and our mind, and that's quite true, because we are these immortal beings of consciousness, and we're all hooked together. You've all heard the expression, we're all one. That's quite true. Now, it doesn't feel that way, I grant you, on a sensual level, it doesn't feel that way. We feel like discrete individuals, but we are all one, part of a greater reality. So those who we view as enemies are as much a part of the oneness as those who we view as lovers and friends. So there is a need to recognize that we can shape our future reality with the way we shape our thoughts, and that anyone who lives a life in which he's embracing the higher ideals of life, the higher virtues, honesty, truthfulness, be of service to others, be a help to others, etc. If you embrace this type of life, you attract to you, because remember, what we call reality is a reflection. So what you see in the mirror depends on what you put out. So what you put out comes back to you. So all of us have a limited time here on this experience. Naturally, we like it to be a real long time, and we all like to live into great old age and die quietly in our sleep. And that happens for some of us, but it doesn't matter if you go unexpectedly. I've lost some very close friends unexpectedly. I thought they would, be here with me as the years rolled by, but they suddenly went. And we have to bear in mind that it's really a dream. The whole experience is a dream, and we could set the stage for our return to the greater reality and to the the experiences we'll have beyond this world by what we do here. And the more we participate in a positive way to live a life that is helpful and beneficial to yourself and others, and, you know, not to harm others, to try to minimize the negative side of conduct and accentuate the good you can accomplish, you will have a much wider palette, if you will, of colors to deal with when you're creating your dream. Because life is a matter of creation. We're creating the world around us daily with our thoughts. So we create the dreams. So we often talk about not wallowing in fear, in negative thought, because that's what you put out. That's what your actions and thoughts are dwelling upon. That's what comes back to you. So if you want a life of less turmoil and greater day-to-day happiness, etc., it's within your grasp, because we can create life on a day-to-day basis, and the cumulative effect of our actions and our thoughts shapes the reality that we experience while we're here. So I'll end that as my little contribution for today, Don, because I'm very interested in giving Z.S. a chance to go into some areas that he didn't have a chance to explore in depth in the last interview or two that we did together.
Well, I appreciate your comment, and I agree with what you said. The rat race of life really keeps us from recognizing who we are, and this is right along with that topic that we talk about on so many shows, recognizing who we are and recognizing our inner gifts that we have that are meant to be shared, to be brought out. You talked about the oneness. Wouldn't it be great if we only had one enemy? You know, that sort of hit me when you were describing it. I'm not making fun of what you said, because it's true. There's nothing I can say about it that will change that either. So I appreciate it. And hang with us, if you will, Ken.
Oh, of course, of course.
Okay, ZS, do you have a follow-up on that, or do you want to tackle your topics?
Well, following up on what you just said about one enemy, well, Pogo the cartoon possum said, "Met the enemy, he is us."
Yeah.
Very good.
You stay close to your mic, ZS, okay? So, yeah.
Okay.
Good solid volume. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, the enemy is us.
Yes. Yeah, we create. We do create the conflicts through our own projection of what we want. The conflicts are deep within ourselves, and of course, in all the mystical paths, all the solutions are found within as well, and digging deeper into the self and going higher into the dimensional structure of the plan for creation, everything converges at the one source. And in the native traditions and in the traditions of African mysticism, it's all the same. They see this life as a projection of a higher reality, and the magic, which the good magic, which I've witnessed in meditation from Haitians helping rescue friend 8 years ago came unbidden outwardly, but inwardly they were there when we needed us, when we needed them. And so they came in as if they already knew who we were, and they were connecting through the oneness of creation. And I got a glimpse of these Haitian women sitting around a campfire in prayerful meditation, doing miraculous things in consciousness, because they knew that they are one with all creation. And they're cleaning up the mess which their brothers and sisters were creating around them. And that's where I know that there's some very powerful and good people on Haiti. And those who would wish to project the image that they control the planet do not want people recognizing their oneness and recognizing their own inner power, their own inner liberty. And going back to the music which you selected, the American Dream is based on the image of one nation under God. Again, we're connecting up through the dimensions and seeing a divine plan and bringing that into manifestation, overcoming the illusionary darkness created by people who are too involved in dream time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that those who wish to control the world are caught up in the total illusion of dream time, and all have cut out all but a small trickle of their soul energy.
I agree. Now, if I could make just a short comment here, because I don't want to get you off track, but this is in line with what you're talking about. As you were speaking, ZS, I was visualizing these concepts that we have of liberty or freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of this, freedom of that. And these are just terms. But we have this tremendous amount of hypocrisy going on while our, I'll put it in quotes, our leaders tell us that we are free and that they're promoting, well, they don't say they're promoting freedom, do they? They promote democracy overseas. They go and raid a country, create war, murder millions of people, cause starvation, disease, our own men and women who are allegedly fighting to preserve those freedoms themselves get maimed and killed. And it's a rather thankless task. And this goes on. Well, the freedom, as far as they're concerned, is the freedom to be corrupt, to steal, to rob, to plunder, to murder, to lie, to cheat, all the things they do. Isn't that rather ironic?
Right. They've put their image upon their lower image and replaced the higher image of freedom. And in the name of security, and which is based on the idea of there being an enemy which can come into your home and disrupt your freedom, they've taken the freedom away. It's an illusion which
they think they generate. They think they have.
They think they have, yes.
Yeah.
At all times, every single individual on the planet has the ability to connect up back to God's source and feel the freedom that God has given us, that the spirit of liberty has always been that, has been given from source. It has been given by the divine plan. We wouldn't be able to live life on this planet unless that spirit of freedom, that divine spark, was there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the very basis of the one identity and the large I and then the small I individuals. And that same, that spark has been, there is actually only one spark of life. We all share it. And the same desire for to be and to love and to understand and to bring forth your own creation is the same impetus that the creator put out in manifesting this creation.
Yeah, you're speaking about natural law and our adherence to natural law, to first of all to understand it and then implement the principles of natural law in our lives. It would right. be so much simpler. All the problems that we have would disappear overnight.
Right.
But there are those that don't want that to happen.
Right.
In fact, they want to defile anything that has to do with the truth. And so, as if, you know, this is where the psychopathy comes in. The truth is going to be the truth regardless of what anybody thinks about it. You know, it's a given. It is what it is. It doesn't need to be defended. Attacking it is idiotic because it still is the truth, you see. And that is the MO of those that want to control everything.
Right.
Is to say anything. Anything goes, as they like to say in their protocols of the learned elders of Zion. They like to say things like, do as thou wilt.
Yep. That
and justifies the means. Those types of things.
Yes.
Now, these ladies you were talking about in Haiti obviously had a much higher understanding and a much higher calling to be undoing all of this negativity on the planet. Tell us more about what you see having transpired.
In the midst of all the voodoo and all the black magic, which has been pushed upon them by, again, the same people who want to take the freedom of the Haitians, take the freedom of all nations, and direct it towards creating wealth and more control for themselves only, they were, all they had was the dresses which they were wearing. And their family and their children living in a small village like situation, and the glimpse of the campfire and the love which held these women together in their love and service for humanity and for their nation of Haiti was very, very powerful. I see the. There's the sons that have the gift and are being directed by the controlling forces, the Tonton Macoud under the Duvaliers and in the earlier dictators of the country, to create a polarization in that country, and in the polarization, find those who would do what thou wilt. Willfully use their own inner gift to steal from others and therefore be useful to those caught in the dreamtime illusion. And so those in the dark magic and the ceremonial rituals would have been scooped up and often were scooped up by the black magicians from other nations, kidnapped, the children taken, forced to do work or else face death by machete. Again, from the same Tonton Macoud or the black shirts who well, the black shirts, the brown shirts, the fascists who were running the country, who did have what little wealth there was in the country, and lived in the mansions in Port-au-Prince or in the outskirts of Port-au-Prince, and kept everybody else in impoverished slavery. And that, in that impoverishment, the polarization created in the weaker children created the desire to go towards darkness, go towards selfishness, get caught up in the illusionary process of taking from others to feed oneself instead of reaching up to source and finding that they would be living not by the bread of the bread of this world, but by every word from God. And these women around this campfire were living manifestations, living projections of the God love into that land. And I felt them 8-9 years ago, and I know they're there still, even though the powers that be have brought about hurricanes and then droughts and then hurricanes and droughts, then now earthquakes and cholera. And they also brought AIDS into the country by the hepatitis B vaccination and by smallpox vaccination, as they did in Africa. Again, creating the polarization of the country and the squalor of the country, which would convince the weaker to do what thou willst instead of what thy will desire, as the prayer says. Thy will be done on earth as is in heaven, and thy will is the manifestation of freedom.
You know, when I listen to you, ZS, I'm getting this image, this false image that's portrayed every 4 years at the Summer Olympics. And Haiti usually has a small contingent of athletes that that show up. Some are very, very talented runners. I think they excel more in the some of the track and field events more than anything. But that's not to say that they're not competing in other events. It gives this illusion to the rest of the world that these people somehow are doing well, they're living well, that they're able to train for the Olympics and accomplish what would be a dream for many around the world who will never ever make the team. And yet they're sort of flaunting all of this insanity in front of our face, aren't they? The depravity. And, you know, how does an athlete in Haiti really train like one in a more developed country where they have food and supplements and even the medicine when it's necessary to treat injuries and to make sure that the athlete is training properly? There you have these dichotomies, these contradictions that go on. And, of course, the people in the country are suffering. Yes. They look upon these athletes as heroes when they come back, even if they don't win, maybe because they got away from it for a little while. Maybe that's what they're really celebrating, mm-hmm. that temporary freedom that they enjoyed.
Of course, the whole idea of glamour or stardom is an image which Hollywood has packaged and shipped around the world and is now sold in as news.
Idol worship in the Bible.
Idol worship,
right? Yeah.
Yes, it's idol worship. And there are some barefoot athletes in track and field, like the Ethiopians who ran 26 miles and kicking off his running shoes because that's how he trained in the highlands of Ethiopia in order to win marathons. And of course, some of the fastest people in the world are in the neighboring island of Jamaica, and they're very, very strong sprinters. We're coming from West Africa, and the Haitians are of that same mix as not exactly the same tribes as Jamaica, but who's the Mr. Bull? I can't even remember his first name right now. He's the fastest sprinter in the world, and he's from Jamaica.
Well, it depends on what race. There is a fast one in the United States.
Yeah.
The 100-meter record goes back and forth between a few individuals. And that, you know, we're not counting the ones on steroids either.
No. Well, we had a Jamaican in out of Toronto who was running.
Yeah,
Ben Johnson,
yes. No place to Chris, by the way.
No. And he was a national idol, and then he proved test positive for steroids. And he was actually using a cocktail of steroids, which came from Russia, which is actually about 20 years behind the times, according to the cocktails of the, coming from the Western nations. And he had very bad acne because he was taking a very crude, detectable cocktail, and he became the national shame. And of course, that glamour and then the shame was the up and down. It creates the projection or the lure to project your conscious out to worship the idol, and then the shame coming back to be sucked dry of the energy feeds directly into the illusionary.
And that's
process.
It's almost like it was designed as a drama for the rest of the world to watch, to take their mind off the fact that there are people in their native country suffering from war and crime and all the travesties that go on that you don't even hear about. We're not hearing the half of what's going on in this country now.
No.
You know, with all the technology we have, why is that? That it shouldn't be that way, should it?
The news has been selected, or it's false news.
Yeah. There, you know, the two news networks owned by Ted Turner that he was so proud of because they were reporting world events has become the laughingstock of the propaganda news media. In fact, they ought to put it on the on Comedy Central, run it in between the cartoons, you know, because it's gotten ridiculous. The gossip and the trying of cases by former prosecutors and, you know, this, it's just nonstop brainwashing, mindlessness, total mindlessness. Who gives a hoot?
Right.
About these people.
And of course, Jon Stewart from, again, the Comedy Central is the most trusted news giver in the States.
My goodness, come on. You know, because somebody likes to laugh all of a sudden, you know, that what they're saying is true. I listen to these guys on all these shows from time to time. People are always posting their clips on YouTube as well. You can't help but run into them.
Yes.
And you listen to some of the ridiculous statements they say to lie on behalf of those lying in Washington and New York. You know, they're torchbearers, not for the Olympics. They're torchbearers for the corruption. And I'll take any one of them on in a debate about that. But they wouldn't do that because the truth would prevail. And that'd be the end of their career.
Laughing at the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Minimizing the truth. Or diverting attention away from though the mention of just a touch of the truth of what's actually happening in the world, they then laugh at it and divert it away or deflect it,
mm-hmm.
people's conscience away from that. And so minimizing attention to the issues that should be pay attention to in order to solve the problems.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so no solution that way.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment you know, because we have very spiritual indigenous people in this country. They're called the American Indians. Mm-hmm. The media in Hollywood have portrayed them to be the bad guys. They're the ones that have to be killed by the cowboys, and slaughtered would be a better term. That's the theme that they run in Hollywood. Come up against the status quo, and you will be taken out, all of you. And so they would wipe out whole tribes of indigenous people who were here beforehand. They were here beforehand, but they had to take it over. Now, one would ask, and the wisdom of those people comes through when they talk about foreseeing or foretelling, prophesying what's going to happen, what will be happening. Now, as I understand it, each tribe had a leader who usually was called the chief, and maybe his second in command or the second most respected individual was known as the medicine man. This was a very spiritual individual. All of a sudden, in the year late 2010 and early 2011, we have people coming forth saying that they're Indian shamans, which is a contradiction, actually, in terms, because although their activities may mirror those of a shaman, they are not shamans. They are medicine men, or they are holy men in their tribes. And shamanistic practices are not of this land. You can study to be a shaman, and you can come here and be one, but that's not what the Indians are doing.
Right.
Yet all, you know, you have all these channelers. Oh, I'm channeling an Indian shaman, meaning an American Indian.
Right.
And I have to chuckle, but then I look at all the people that propagate the story. They aid and abet in the dissemination of lies. Or untruths, if you want to call it that. These are just terms, okay? But if you're going to call somebody a rabbi and he's a Bible-thumping Baptist minister, obviously there's a misnomer there.
Right.
And to call a medicine man from an American Indian tribe a shaman is a slap in the face. It's disinformation of the highest order, especially when you consider that they're representing a spirituality. Like somehow this makes it true. Oh, you know, you can't mess with the shamans up there in the Black Hills. You know, come on. You know, what are your thoughts on what's occurring too? Because, we spend our time discerning the truth. And there are a heck of a lot of people out there just spewing venom and carbonated diet soda.
Packaged.
Yeah, to whoever will listen to them. Go ahead. I'm interested in what you okay. have to say about it.
Actually, we do have a pipe carrier who is trained in Greengrass, South Dakota. And she is received a pipe carrier from the same tradition as White Buffalo Calf Woman by the family who carry that tradition. And she can spot a fake at 100 miles because she spent 4 years doing all the rituals out in the cold hills. And she's 65 now. And you can see that she looks Native now. She was born in Winnipeg, Manitoba, but she looks Native. and though she doesn't have a drop of native blood in her, and she went to a Canadian powwow last summer in Lillooet, BC, which is a very spiritual place, about 3 hours from Salmon Arm, where I am right now, and the leaders of those who had vision actually set up blocked those fake ones from coming in with their fake pipes and would not allow those people to speak because they had not proven themselves. And the same woman gave me a little book that was put together 30, 40 years ago, reclaiming the Sundance and the traditions of Sundance, the traditions of the Vision Quest, the Sweat Lodge traditions. And you really have to be spiritual to be able to do, to follow the procedures laid out in the book. And you can't fake it. So if somebody's coming along claiming to be an Indian shaman or a medicine man or whatever, to those in the know, their words are worthless. But the worthless words for somebody who does not know are false guides. And I believe that quite a number of those who have just come on the scene are self-appointed gatekeepers or appointed by the same MK Ultra type of mind control that has been around for since World War II and before that.
Well, you see, this is an attempt to intercede in the spiritual awakening that might be occurring in the life of whatever individual is following such a person. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're hearing a spiritual message, but it's cloaked in dogma. It's cloaked in untruths. You know, this whole message of, well, this person has channeled this message, but never identifying the source or making up a name or just giving it a name. And maybe, as you said, they're so mind controlled that they're not even aware that they're using this name or why they're using it. In their mind, they could actually believe that they're in communication with that person. What's wrong with communicating with God?
Yes. why not have a direct pipeline to source? Yes. And you're able to remain conscious and not have somebody else substitute into your physical body and speak words that aren't your own.
No, we have to have fancy names like Charisse, the Jewel, Crystal, Mama, or something like that.
Yes.
You know.
It's hard to make a blanket statement on trans-channeling, but because there are there's good information coming through and you can actually feel some of the better information coming through But the vast majority of trans-channeling, which is born out of hypnotism, is from the black magicians. And it is what they can control.
And
they can't.
Yeah, and that channel, if it's a genuine channel, is not going to create the story. That information is going to come from another source. And where is the discernment? When it's disinformation coming out, that's
yes.
Kind of a tip-off.
Yes.
You know?
And a lot of channeled information just falls apart upon first reading. Ken's had a lot of channeled stuff passed to him, and he's very, very good at this, like you, discerning what's the lie. And it has no power.
Yeah.
It just does not ring true.
Yeah, I read a piece. Actually, it's an email response Ken made to one of his readers that was questioning the Ken's stance on the Dr. Jeffrey McDonald family murder that occurred, which he was framed for. There's no doubt about that. And
Fort Bragg.
Yeah. Ken responded to the comments and really gave the guy a tongue lashing when he was done. I was glad he said what he said, because you could see that these were baited questions and they were superficial and they really had nothing to do with the case whatsoever. And Ken handled it brilliantly. But see, you try to talk sense into someone like that, and I suppose while you're taking the time to respond to the questions, and Ken doesn't really have to justify why he feels Dr. McDonald is innocent, but nevertheless, he gets a know-it-all that wants to bring up a couple of points that somehow this is the smoking gun, this is the evidence that convicts the man, whether he is claiming he's innocent or anyone else is claiming he's innocent. And Ken had his way with the guy. When he was done, I don't think the guy will probably ever write back to him again, to tell you the truth.
Don, if I may just add a few points there.
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you for your comments on that letter. I want to first, just for a moment, since you diverted to the Dr. McDonald case, I do from time to time answer letters. I don't get too many inquiries about it these days, but when I first put up his page a number of years ago, I got more mail from it. If I might say that one of the reasons I respond to some of those emails rather than just ignore them or not respond or, let's say, respond in a more passive way is simply because I would like to get the reader's attention. And in this case, in this particular instance, Jeffrey McDonald has been so badly abused by the judicial system. Plus, he has arrayed against him a large, let's say, media effort to make him look like a very evil dude. And it bothers me to no end how this guy has been railroaded in the truest sense of the word by both, first, a corrupt system, a judicial system that really goes back to the army. Essentially, the army framed this guy. And they pursued him in civilian life and really framed him badly. The prosecution, the judge in the case, etc., was very, very much corrupt individuals. And they had an agenda to hang these murders on the man because the individuals who actually committed the murder were working in league with corrupt army elements who were involved in a CIA drug pipeline that ran from Vietnam into Fort Bragg. So in order to try to address the thousands and thousands of negative letters that Jeffrey McDonald has received since being sent to prison in 1979, and the many thousands of emails which are sent to his wife, who in fact never responds to the sort of letters that I respond to. So in a way, I'm trying to fill in a gap there that I think needs to be filled, because in order to get, let's say, the neutral reader's attention, I have to make it clear just how badly those who would distort the record or simply make up things and claim it as fact, et cetera, I need to counter them in a way that the reader will understand that a profound injustice had been taken place there. And it continues to this day. Jeffrey McDonald was sent to prison for life in 1979. He briefly got out on an appeal for 1 year. However, he was reincarcerated, and he's been in prison ever since. He's still in prison today, and he's getting older and older. That was, well, let's see, that's 32 years ago. And his whole life has been snatched from him. And Ted Gunderson made the story known to me, made the railroading known to me around 1999 when we talked about the McDonald case at length. And from that time till now, I've had a section of my website devoted to the Jeffrey McDonald case.
You and I interviewed Kathy McDonald about a year ago or so.
Yes. Yes. And it just breaks my heart how outrageous this crime has been allowed to go on so long, and this man is still in prison. It's one of the greatest miscarriages of justice, I think, in the modern history of the United States. This guy was a prince. He was a dedicated, believing American who went into the military during the war, during the Vietnam War, and he signed up for a very rough and tough outfit. You know, it's not easy to go through Green Beret training. It's far, far tougher than the typical infantry training that most Army guys get. And, you know, he did all that because he was at the right age. He was physically fit person. He was gung-ho personality. He worked very hard to put himself through college and medical school, et cetera. Had a young family, should have enjoyed a normal life. His girls would have been grown adults, not with families of their own. He would have had grandchildren at this point. All of this robbed from him. Of course, his first wife, she was murdered that night as well. All these things robbed from him. And then on top of that, first he has to suffer that. He almost was killed himself that night, which is part of the response I gave to this fellow who tried to dismiss the very serious injuries that McDonald himself had sustained that night. He had been beaten with a baseball bat repeatedly, was knocked unconscious, and he was stabbed 17 times. And one of the stab wounds punctured his right lung and caused it to collapse. That this story, this man's case, bothers me intensely. And I'm, as long as I have my website up, I'll have a section devoted to Jeff McDonald. So I'll stop there. I know I've gotten a little bit off track, but since you brought it up, I just wanted to mention the McDonald case again. It's a huge, huge travesty of injustice that I hope to God someday this man is delivered from the fate that he's been
from the clutches of evil.
Absolutely.
See, it's another aspect of the same thing that we're talking about here. This pseudo spirituality, or in a case, I mean, there's no spirituality involved whatsoever when you have people committing ritualistic murder and then blaming one of the victims for the murder and having a corrupt system that promotes it.
That's exactly what happened. You just said it in one sentence. You just said it right there, Don.
And we'll do anything to protect it, to keep it a secret.
Right.
But it's not a secret, is it, ZS?
No, it's a lie revealed and self-destroyed. And the more lies are revealed, the more they'll be self-destroyed. And that's what Ken has been doing for many years now, revealing lies and putting light into dark places. Congratulations on educateyourself.org.
Thank you very much, C.S. I appreciate that comment.
And
yeah, well said, Ken. I agree with what you said. very much. So you've spent many, many years studying this as well. You didn't just fall off the turnip truck last week.
No, the McDonald case is very well explained in a book called Fatal Justice by a man named Fred Boss and Jerry Potter. Fred Boss is still alive. He was a reporter down there in the Fort Bragg area. He used to be in the Green Berets himself. Jerry Potter passed on a few years ago, but the greatest tribute ought to go to Ted Gunderson, ex-FBI LA Bureau Chief Ted Gunderson, convinced Jerry Potter to look into the McDonald case. And from there, it took 10 years. He talked to Jerry Potter in 85, and the book came out in 95. That book tells the real case of what happened in the McDonald murders. There was a book of fiction, a novel, written by a man named Joe McGinnis that painted McDonald as guilty in the matter. And they made a mini TV series out of it, four-part TV series in the early 80s. That actually destroyed McDonald's reputation with the American people. That movie and that book.
And it was propaganda.
Absolutely. It was a fiction. Much of what Joe McGinnis purported to be fact were things made up by Joe McGinnis. He was sued around 1981 by the McDonald defense team for lies. They won the suit against him. They won about $250,000 from the publisher of McGinnis' book. But as it turns out, the former in-laws of McDonald sued to get the money. So McDonald himself never got any of the money that his lawsuit had won. The travesties of this man's injustices are just mind-boggling.
Well, I could tell you that happened because McDonald himself was very unlikely to give a kickback to the judge.
He certainly wasn't
in a position to do it.
That's another dimension to the story, the betrayal by his former father-in-law. His first wife, this man, his name is Freddie Kasabian, was not her natural father. It was her stepfather. And this man had a history of involvement with British intelligence during the Second World War. He originally has a Middle Eastern background. And when the murders first happened, he was all gung-ho to defend Jeff. And he encouraged Jeff to go on the Dick Cavett show, which, as it turns out, worked against Jeff in the public relations game. However, the prosecutors from the Army turned Freddie Kasabian against Jeff McDonald. Of course, Jeff is in prison. And these guys are whispering things in Freddie Kasabian's ear for years. And so they successfully turn him, and he went the other way and absolutely added to the already grave injustice that Jeff McDonald had endured.
Well, we have that going on in some other areas today, not the same case, but similar. Fritz Springmeier is an example. Also, Edgar J. Steele, the attorney who is rather outspoken about freedom and the right to bear arms and those types of issues, and has taken some rather bold stances representing people who are in all principle wanting to get to the truth. This is these Gestapo tactics of throwing someone in a gulag and causing them to suffer In Edgar Steele's case, it is a setup using sophisticated voice recording technology, claiming that he solicited the murder of his wife and his mother-in-law. That's how desperate they are to stop people from winning in the battle between the light and the darkness. ZS, I know you want to say something. I can hear you.
And that same injustice has been foisted upon all the native tribes in North America and all the native peoples around the world by those who wish to steal the land. And also any path of spiritual tradition that does connect people to the truth.
Isn't it rather ironic that the people who are in the profession to help you with those problems are part of the corruption? So many, such a high percentage.
Yes. Well, in Canada here, if you see a lawyer with the letters QC after his name, that makes him a Queen's Counsel, and they're part of the system. They're part of the corrupt system, even though they're held in high esteem and you get the judges' jobs and they get the high fees. They put out a large amount of money and paid the Bar Association, the British system of justice, a huge fee in order to get the Queen's Counsel stamp of approval from the system of parasites. And so it's a parasitical system. And so those who are supposedly the protectors of the truth are the gatekeepers of the lie. It's very Orwellian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it's a lot of people aren't aware of this, but the Canadians do sing God Save the Queen.
Yes.
So Canada is still a colony under the subjugation of the Queen of England.
And the Treaty of Westminster in 1932, which set up the Commonwealth of Nations, just reinforced that whole servitude. We're part of the British Commonwealth.
Yes. So in essence, then, we could say that when countries begin warring with each other, arguing with each other, competing with each other, they're all trying to get a cut of what the Queen's been getting.
Yes.
Aren't they?
Yes.
This is nothing but organized crime going after organized crime. You know?
Yes. Yeah, the mafia started long ago.
And it's you know, to say that the problem is more endemic here in the United States, I don't think so. I just think that Canada is so large and so spread out population-wise. You know, the people are concentrated in pockets more in the cities than they are. And it's become that way here, too, because of the seizing of land by the federal government under the guise of whether it's national security or it falls under some bureaucracy or just because they want to steal it. Hmm. You know,
yes.
We're never really told the truth about these things, and most people aren't paying attention until you go someplace and you see miles and miles and miles of signs that say federal property, no trespassing, or even more dire warnings.
In Canada, that's called Crown land. They directly say who it belongs to, and that's 90% of the land. We don't have a Bureau of Land Management or anything like that. We have Crown land. And there's all sorts of different business agreements with mining companies, with forestry, in order to develop the resources of the land, but of course the kickback goes back to the crown. And
now I'll tell you, Dick Cheney, former vice president of these United States, didn't waste any time. He had whole teams of people sizing up the value and the availability of all kinds of minerals and things to be mined in Canada.
Yes.
As soon as he got in office.
Right. And a lot of those mines are now have been sold to the Chinese. A lot of copper is being developed now throughout the province here. And the huge Highland copper mine of Kamloops, which you've probably never heard about, has a glory hole to rivals the one in Butte, Montana. And they actually got three of them. And open pit mining. And even on, if you do a Google search, they've actually masked out those huge pit mines. It's a mile across.
Well, they don't want anybody to see that they're digging there. That's what you said.
And there's three other places in the province where there's been all sorts of legal shenanigans, taking it away from the original developers and putting it into other people's hands, especially the politicians. And all sorts of different excuses. And the Sierra Club plays right in with that on environmental issues. Quite often when you hear the term Sierra Club or Greenpeace, you know that just somebody's been paid to make money for a corporation.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, the time has flown by, and I did want to play another song and have us consider what's going on and facing it, realizing it, because it doesn't make you feel good. It doesn't make you feel comfortable, certainly. And I have a musical message before our guests conclude with their final comments here. This is Yellow Jackets and Even the Pain.
Destiny called her, but too soon for her age. Oh, if I'd only listened, she might be here today. And we somebody caught us, set us free.
Again, ask the listening audience if you would kindly, if you're so inclined, say a prayer for Chris Johnson and his wife, Becky, and their two sons, Luke and Levi, at this sorrowful time. That's a strong family, and I can tell you those young men are already showing their faith in God, their trust in God, and an unusually strong character. They're saying, we got to be strong. We have to be strong. And I know that Chris Johnson will be back when the Lord's army comes here in that last final battle with evil. He knew way too much about what was going on to not enlist in that army. My guests tonight have been Mr. Ken Adachi and Zora Nova Star Livingstone. Ken, I'm going to allow you to make a closing comment here. Try to keep it to a minute. Okay.
Okay, Don. Thank you. I'll just take a minute to say that we're living in a time of expanding consciousness, and that expansion is due to accelerate. There's a man in Greece by the name of Cephas who contacts me from time to time. He's had remarkable experiences of, let's say, a paranormal nature. And he recently sent me an email concerning what the Mayan people believe is going to be an event of great, great expansiveness of consciousness beginning in March 9th of this year and extending through October of 2011. And during this period, many things will be revealed to many people, and I think we'll perhaps all notice. I've been noticing it at an accelerated pace in just the last few months. Many important pieces of information will come to you out of the blue, and you'll will be in a very different place of understanding, let's say, by fall of this year than we are now, because I believe this process is unstoppable, and that the so-called 100th monkey effect will kick in. And I believe the New World Order game plan is on a downward slope. I believe the end for these plans, rather than coming to fruition as the dark side expects, are going to go the other way. I have that firm feeling that we're at the point where there's going to be a turning of the tide, and this year probably we'll see some major events unfold. And thank you for having us again, Don.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you both on. Thank you for coming again. And I agree with your message. I don't have to say, let us hope that it's true, because I know it is. I'm in total agreement with you and have been for some time. They're pulling out all the stops because nothing's working. That's it in a nutshell. But I don't want to take words from ZS or put words in his mouth. ZS?
Going back to the native tribes, that what's not taught in the history books, but sometimes briefly mentioned, is that the traditions of in the Constitution came from the Iroquois. And even the term caucus and a few other terms used in the Congress and the Senate come from the traditions the Iroquois used in creating council and creating the League of Seven Nations that spread over an area larger than the Roman Empire just before the white man came to this continent. And so they controlled an area around the Great Lakes and into southern Canada. And the spirit of freedom existed in their council and their meeting places and their trading sites where they would get together. They would be working on a spiritual basis. And that spirit of freedom was in that Iroquois Confederacy, Iroquois Nation. And I believe that work done by Lakota and the Hopi and all the tribes has reinforced the spirit of freedom to create the spirit of America. It's hidden in the backwoods. And the Sundance was attacked and put underground for over 100 years because it was a spiritual powerhouse of freedom. Thank you, Don.
Well, thank you for your message. That hits home too, and I know that to be true. And it stands on its own two feet. We don't have to meddle with it for it to be true. It's just how it is. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for being on Evident Footprints tonight, and I want to remind you and our listening audience that you will be back with us again Thursday, the 24th of February, so I'm looking forward to that show as well. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about based on what we witness now on a daily basis. So
thanks, Dan.
Both take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that wraps it up. You have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's guests, Ken Adachi and Z.S. Livingstone. Be sure to check out Z.S.'s work at educate-yourself.org, and while you're there, check out Ken's work as well. Special thanks go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. Over at BBS Radio, we had Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Be sure to tune in tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than the author of The Committee of 300, Dr. John Coleman. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.